Let's begin now.
Christian University.
Hey, I'm Jordan, and I'm a five-year senior at Cincinnati Christian University, and that must make this stuff you should learn. And this is going out to all of our future teachers. We got a lot of helpful information for you today. So, I got an email from Anthony Jones, one of the professors here, and he said an assignment that has been due for 3 months now is only due on Friday, but it was supposed to be due Tuesday. And I haven't done it yet. But because he gave me an extra 3 days, I'm a lot more motivated to do it now. And that has a lot to do with my view of motivation and how much I procrastinate. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. Motivation and perception of self.
And as teachers, motivation is pretty much half the job if you think about it. Our job is to teach our kids the information we're given. But if they're not motivated, then... well, there's no point in being there, really.
There's not much. If you can't figure out how to get your students involved and enjoying what you're doing, your battle's pretty much lost. So today we're going to talk about all the aspects of motivation and all the aspects of perception of self and how they relate to each other.
Yep, so starting with perception of self, that topic kind of rolls into motivation. So starting with perception of self, there's a term called self-efficacy, which Jack Snowman and Rick McCown talk about in their textbook, Psychology Applied to Teaching. And perception of self is basically, if you think about it, self-esteem. They talk about how the student's self-esteem kind of relates to motivation and it inspires them to have motivation, whether they have it or not. So starting with the goals that it produces in the student's mind, if they have a lot of self-efficacy or a lot of self-esteem, they're going to have a goal that makes them, like, the teacher's, like, dream kid to have.
These are, like, the golden children or those favorite kids where you just think sometimes, I really wish all of my kids were like this. In reality, it would be kind of boring if all your kids were perfect and they just had their own motivation. And they were like, no, just give me more homework. I want to do it. I want to learn. Right. That would not be that fun as a teacher. But those are the kids that are typically the task mastery goal-oriented children.
Yep, so they have high self-efficacy. They know their own abilities. They know their limits. So they're willing to just take on a task.
The second one would be performance approach children. And with these children, they just want to get a good grade. They don't really care about the learning per se. They really just care about the achievement. This is people, and it could even apply to sports or any other aspect of life. This is the people that just want to win for the sake of the achievement and not necessarily love for whatever activity they're doing. And in education, this is a big deal because we don't want people to memorize things for the sake of passing a test. We want them to learn, and that's a big deal. And a lot of teachers struggle with that with the increase in standardized testing nowadays. And as an upcoming teacher, you're going to have to figure out, how do I find ways to help my students pass these tests but not manipulate them in a way to where it takes away from their joy for learning? And that's a big deal when you're dealing with performance approach type children.
Yep, and I think it's possible to get through all of school with this mindset.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. And in college a lot, we kind of go through a class and we say, for example, I need to get a B- for the education department in this class. I'm going to do whatever it takes to get that B- and nothing but the B-.
Yep.
And if you know that that is your approach, it really takes away from how much you're learning, even though it's easy to fall into that trap when you know exactly what you have to keep going towards that goal of a diploma.
Yep, definitely way easier to go for the grade than to actually master what you're learning. So that's why students with low self-efficacy, they'll go for this kind of goal because they don't think that they can actually achieve something. They just think that they can get the grade.
Yeah, that R, they haven't found a way to find their own joy in the learning or the subject itself. That's another big deal. Yep. And so the last type of student is the rough one to deal with sometimes, and this is the performance avoidance type. And this is typically when a student will procrastinate or they'll engage in habits that hurt themselves in their learning and really anything. And the one common denominator in all these students is that they will typically blame the circumstances that they're in, and that will allow them to continue using that behavior in the future. And as a college student, a lot of us are guilty with procrastination, as I was talking about earlier with my papers that have been due for a really long time that I'm probably going to do in the next couple days. And it does work sometimes, but sometimes it catches up with you. So that's what all this is about, is finding a way to balance all these things with motivation and perception of self. And Snowman and McCown did a really good job, and we are struggling to figure out how to pronounce his name. It's Snowman or Snowman, but as we're recording, it's very close to Christmas, so we're definitely going to call him Snowman. Okay, so all those habits that we just talked about really have a huge impact on our perception of ourselves and who we are and what motivates us to do things. And Kendra Cherry, I love that her last name is Cherry, by the way. That's a pretty stellar last name. She's a psychology expert, and she wrote Why Being Yourself is So Important. And it had this great quote about your self-esteem, and I like to read it. It says, a person's attitudes, abilities, and cognitive skills comprise what is known as the self-system. And self-efficacy is an essential part of the self-system. And I just love that word, efficacy. I just feel so smart saying it.
Yeah. So if we want to break it down a little bit, the topics that she talks about, a person's attitudes, abilities, cognitive skills, and she explains that they all three work together. So I think it's really important to recognize the self-efficacy part of this, because self-efficacy, like your knowledge of yourself and who you are, how much you can do, attitudes, your cognitive skills, it all works together.
Yeah, and all three of these things, your attitude, abilities, and cognitive skills, really make up how well you believe you're going to do things and how much you motivate yourself to do things. Because a lot of times teachers will tell students, you're not good at math, you're not good at history, and they'll start to believe that, and they'll build that schema in their head about math or whatever, and then for the rest of their educational career, they'll continue to believe this about math, for example. Math is the common one among students. And whenever they're presented with a math project or anything involved with math, before they find out what the project even is, they already have this issue with their efficacy in response of these negative thoughts. So, and that's directly connected with self-esteem, if you ask me.
Yep, and even going into reading, we'll go into reading a little bit later, but students could be told that they're not able to read at a certain level, and they'll see a book that's marked at a certain level, and they'll say, I can't read that, or they'll think they just won't try. Like we talked about, the performance approach goals or the performance avoidance goals, they don't have that perception of themselves that they're able to achieve at that level that they are able to achieve at. So they'll just settle for lower grades or just a lower amount of work.
Yeah, and so before we move on, I would love to just say and caution that as a future teacher, you need to make sure that you are doing your best to build into the perception of self in your students, and be careful about labeling students and telling them this is an issue for you or this is an issue for you. You should try and focus on the positive and say this is a very strong aspect of your knowledge, and help them build on that for the rest of their education.
So yeah, I think it's really important to build the self-perceptions that our students have of themselves. Obviously, we can't do the whole job, but we can do a lot to help them have positive ideas of their abilities and know what their strengths are, at least.
And you just need to care. And as a teacher, that's one of the biggest aspects that we're going to cover today, is if you care, you're going to want to motivate your students to want to learn. And you're going to want them to learn in general, because you know how useful information is. I mean, if you're listening to me, you're probably in college, and you've at least realized to an extent how important it is to learn and care about your own education. And I'm sure you're going to want that for your students, and that's why this motivation stuff is so important.
Right. And Karen Kirk. Is it Karen or is it Corinne?
I have no idea. I was looking at her name and I'm like, Corinne sounds cuter, but it's probably Karen because she's a professional.
Right, right. Well, either way, Corinne Kirk wrote an article. She works for the IDEA, and she wrote an article called Student Motivations and Attitudes, which is perfect, spot on for what we're talking about today.
Absolutely.
And she wrote about the two types of motivation that there are. So we talked about how we can inspire motivation by encouraging good self-efficacies in our students, and she hit on two topics in particular.
Yeah, the two types of motivation, I found these in our text by Old Snowman, and it didn't really make that much sense to me, and I really loved Corinne's article. And so the first type of motivation is intrinsic. And intrinsic, as Karen says, is mostly based on inherent interest and task mastery. And basically, this is going to be the students that we talked about earlier that have that high efficacy, and they really are just self-motivated. They have that drive. They want to learn. They want to achieve. And they want to do it for the sake of doing it. And that just made a lot more sense to me. And then the second type of motivation is extrinsic. And this is, you know, the throwing the candy around, or we're going on a field trip to Kings Island. These are the children that, Corinne worded it, they want a specific result or outcome, or they want a reward. And that's just a really great way of just saying the dramatic difference between these two types of motivation. One is a little bit more clean cut. You do it because you want to do it. And then the second one's kind of manipulative. You do it because you want this reward, or you want to win something. And it's not the focus isn't on the activity itself. The focus is on the outcome.
Right. And I think as perspiring teachers, I think that it's really important for us to try to inspire an intrinsic motivation in our students. So we want to see students who want to learn. We want to see students who want to ask questions that will kind of set them in the direction of learning even more than is in the standards that we have to teach them. So we want that. But also, I think it's kind of a slippery slope when we start labeling one as good and one as bad.
Very true, very true. Because a lot of people that don't like extrinsic motivation, just imagine some teacher kicking the door down to the classroom, shooting a t-shirt gun full of candy at the kids and saying, do your math homework, we're all going to eat candy for the rest of the year. And it's not always about, you know, throwing candy at your students, this, that, and the other. There's plenty of ways to where you can use rewards as an incentive to grow intrinsic motivation. And one of my favorite ones, we talked about this before, was the variable reward system, where the students don't know when the reward is going to come. It's, you know, they do something well one time, you give them a reward, you don't give them another one seven more times, they just don't know. And I feel like that's a very healthy way to do it, because it gets them into a pattern where they're motivating themselves to do it. So it's kind of like a combination of both, if you ask me.
Right. And I think it's impossible to start teaching in a classroom and not use extrinsic motivation. You may be on the side that intrinsic is the best, and I think that's a positive side to be on. I think I'm on that. But extrinsic motivation, I think, just comes so naturally, and it's essential too. If you are in a classroom full of kids who just want to play with scissors all day, you're going to have to offer a punishment if they decide to walk over to those scissors again.
Yeah, and so this just reminds me, if you think about it, motivation is very key to our lives. It's just a basic instinct. To be honest, if we didn't do it unintentionally, some people would have to gain motivation to breathe. And I'm going to be honest, there would be times where I would be too lazy to breathe and I might just die. So I'm really lucky that I don't have to worry about that. And a lot of people won't eat because they don't have the motivation. And so motivation isn't something that is limited to the education field. This is something that is spread all throughout our lives. You know, you have to get motivated to go to class. You have to get motivated to pay your bills. I mean, and by showing students that they can build their own motivation through intrinsic motivation, we give them examples of how to live successful lives. And to be honest, there's extrinsic motivation in real life. A lot of people are working in jobs that they don't enjoy, but they really enjoy those paychecks.
Yeah, so let's bring it back to the classroom a little bit. As future teachers, we're going to have to make a lot of lesson plans. And one of the things that we're going to have in mind when we go to start is what is going to engage our students the most. And I think that's super key. I think that's foundational to our lessons, because we aren't going to be able to be effective at all if we are not able to motivate our students. I think finding the motivation techniques that fit us and fit our students is really important.
Yeah, and absolutely. And that I want to echo that about writing a lot of lesson plans. That's going to be a big part of your job as a future educator. And you're really going to have to work hard to find a balance between covering these core standards that students have to learn and at the same time capturing their interest and maintaining that motivation for them to keep going. To be honest, you're going to have some students that want to do worksheets. You're going to have some students that want to paint. So you're going to have to find all these ways to keep each student engaged and balance yourself. And to be honest, you need to remember to motivate yourself and be able to know that this is what you want to do and know that that's a part of this. And it's interesting to talk in terms of teachers motivating their students, but I would also like to take a second to just talk about teachers being motivated to teach.
Yeah, so as teachers, we do have to think about ourselves too, because we're going to be influencing our students. We're going to be rubbing off on them. So if we're not motivated to learn something or to teach something, our students aren't going to be motivated either.
Absolutely. And they're going to pick up on your body language. They're going to pick up on your enthusiasm, all those things. Our students are really smart, and we've got to believe that, and we've got to believe that we can make them smarter.
Right. And even to the topic of multiple intelligences, we've talked about that a lot in classes, and we learn about those multiple ways of learning that students take and ways that are most effective for certain students to learn, just the way their brains are wired. But really at the heart of that, I would say, is their motivation. Because
yeah,
if they see that this is the way that I learn or this sounds the most fun to me, that's motivation right there for you.
And it's going to help them in the future that if they know that they're a kinesthetic learner or they're a visual learner, they're going to know in the future, if I want to study, I'll do better if I do it this way. Or if I want to learn this topic, I'll do better if I research it this way. And that's true for college students. That's true for elementary age students. That's true for people of all types. The more you know about yourself, and that this goes back to the perception of self, the more you understand yourself, the more you're going to be able to handle your motivation and be able to motivate yourself to continue learning. And like we've been saying the whole time, that's key to being a teacher, is just you yourself learning your students and then helping your students learn themselves and surrounding them with education that benefits them the most. Okay, so we get that it's very important to motivate our students in the care, but we're also realistic and we understand that it's not going to be all sunshine, butterflies, and rainbows in our classroom, no matter how much candy we shoot at our kids. So we have to accept the fact that there's going to be a loss of motivation at times among our students.
Yep, and Carnegie Mellon University produced an article called Students Lack Interest or Motivation. That pretty much covers the topic that we're going to with
absolutely.
This. So a couple reasons why they said that students lose motivation. These things are things that are outside of our control. We can do a couple things to improve them, but for the most part, like one of them, conflicting priorities.
Yeah.
Students got stuff going on at home.
Yeah, you have to understand your students. You have to know, and this goes back to caring, you have to know if your students live in a bad neighborhood and there's bad things going on at home that interfere with the homework situation.
Right. And the other reason is a lot of times students will think that their effort won't improve their performance. So these are the kids that are low self-efficacy. So they'll think that no matter how hard they try, they're just not good test takers, or they're just not good at reading, or math isn't their thing.
And this goes back to what we were talking about earlier with building into your students and not adding to that negative thought process. If you get a student that doesn't feel encouraged when they start a math project, you need to, as an educator, take that cue or take that hint and say, I need to build into this child and let them know, no, you're not bad at math. You've just struggled with math before, and this is where I come in as your teacher who cares about you, and I'm going to help you get past this hurdle, and I'm going to show you that you really can achieve in math. You just have to learn what best suits you and how you can best learn.
Right, and as belief of that increases, I think students will be more intrinsically motivated.
Absolutely, that is a very good thought. The more you build into them and the more they believe, they truly believe that they can achieve that, and the more people they have telling them, wow, you are pretty good at math, or wow, you are pretty good at history, the more that they'll build that intrinsic and that internal motivation to achieve in that field.
Right. Everybody loves doing something that they're really good at. And everybody also loves doing something that they know is important that they're good at. So a lot of times, and this aspect isn't completely out of our control, but a lot of times students won't see any value in the content, or they'll think that it doesn't apply to their life. Sometimes that's just an excuse that they use to not do work, but...
And I know a lot of our college students out there listening can definitely attest to this reason to lose motivation, because very often, coming into college, you'll say, why do I need all these general education courses? And you're in the class and you're thinking, I'm never going to use this. And so just remember that when you have a student that looks you in the eyes and says, I'm never going to use this information, right. How are you going to respond to that? Because you thought the same thing at one point.
Yep, you've been there.
And I'm there right now as I'm dreading writing this paper that I've been procrastinating to write. So as a teacher, I feel like that's probably going to be one of your more difficult things that you have to face, is when, as they said at this Carnegie Mellon study, when your students find little value in the content, you really have to find a way to make that content valuable, and that goes into your lesson plans and understanding the multiple intelligences.
Right. One way that I can think of to do that, we've done a lot of like thematic units, and we basically just take a topic, like anything, dinosaurs, the weather.
Yeah, the weather. Why do I need to learn about the weather? Well, let's make it fun.
Yeah, you can cover all kinds of standards just by hitting on some of those relationships that like a math standard or science standard has with that general subject.
Yes.
If you get their interest sparked in something, if you find out that there's a whole bunch of kids in your class that just love cars, use it.
Yeah, use cars to teach math, or use cars to teach history, or use cars to teach the weather. You can find things that interest your children and use them to, I hate to say it, but manipulate them into wanting to learn or finding interest in these things that they don't find much value in.
So now that we kind of understand how important it is to have our kids always motivated, there's an article put out by the Center on Education Policy, or the CEP, called Student Motivation, an Overlooked Piece of School Reform. And they're talking a lot about targeted intervention programs and reward systems and how to motivate your students, actually.
And I actually have a direct connection with the targeted intervention programs, because my sister had a developmental disability in high school, and targeted intervention programs focus heavily on finding students that have issues early on and being proactive to not let those issues hinder their education. And in my sister's case, she had a very strong developmental disability, as I said. And what they did was, in her sophomore year of high school, they took her and put her in a trade school instead of having her struggle in the regular high school. And this resulted in her not dropping out and graduating. And these target intervention programs focus very frequently on dropouts. Like, that's one of the biggest things that they want to prevent, is they want to see these patterns among students, you know, failing certain classes, skipping a lot, procrastination, all these negative habits, and they want to catch them early on and take advantage of these tools that we use as educators to catch them, and they want to move these students around or do whatever they can to make sure that it doesn't get as bad as it could get. And I felt like the CEP did a great job of describing that in the article.
So the other method that the CEP talks about is the reward systems, which is what we talked about with the shooting candy.
Candy everywhere!
Right? So this is pretty controversial, because some people think that it's a great idea. And as we talked about, everyone pretty much uses the reward system. Everyone
yeah,
uses it.
Yeah, whether you believe it or not, you're giving rewards of some sort. So go ahead, stop getting upset, and just accept it.
Right? So, in theory, some people are really against it. Some people are really for it. Starting with the people who are against it, they claim that the system is not super beneficial in the long run, because once they take away that motivation, students aren't rewarded anymore. So if you are considering intrinsic motivation as a long-term goal, this is not something you would use a reward system, or at least you would use it in gradual amounts.
Yeah, and you wouldn't focus heavily on it, because if those students don't get those rewards that they've come accustomed to, they're going to lose all their motivation. And that's what the CEP article focused on, was you're taking away from the ultimate goal of education, which is to make people want to learn for the sake of learning. And you're taking away, in a manipulative way, their own personal motivation by taking that reward from them at some point, whether you want to or not, because eventually they're going to leave your class.
Right, and we talked about this in class with our professor's daughter when she was potty training her. Her daughter got a little treat every time afterwards. but her daughter's not going to be a six-year-old child getting a treat every time she uses the bathroom. So the way this reward system works in a positive way is by slowly removing the reward after time.
Yeah, and it helps build balance. And this is a good thing for schools or classrooms that have lost their balance or lost control. A reward system will definitely help you bring that balance back and bring that control back.
So, and another positive of this is the reward system requires effort right away from the students. So if the goal of the reward system is to produce a behavior that's kind of immediate, then you can automatically say, do you want your reward? Do you want your treat? Or you can threaten it like that. Or you can offer a reward. If you do this, you will get X, Y, or Z. And it just kind of gives an immediate response from the student.
Yeah, this has a lot of connection to the operant learning system from Skinner and his research, where the positive reinforcement and the negative reinforcement is directly connected with, you know, these reward systems. It's kind of, you ring the bell, they know what's going to happen. You do your homework 5 days in a row, you know that you're going to get this reward. So the one great thing is that as long as this reward system is consistent, it will require the students to do whatever you want them to do for the sake of getting that reward. So that is one true item about this.
Yeah, and like we talked about, we don't completely want students that are robots. I don't want to say that we don't want completely motivated students, but we don't want students who just cause your job to be completely boring.
So all these rewards and all these things have a huge impact on how the students behave in your classroom. And that brings us to how to motivate them without necessarily a reward per se, but just tools that you can use as an educator to make sure that your students are motivated and building on their intrinsic motivation. And Barbara Davis wrote a wonderful book called Tools for Teaching, and she gave these four tips that I thought were really great for how to do this.
So first of all, she said, give your students frequent positive feedback. And so that kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier. You want to make sure you build that positive self-efficacy in your students. Just give them positive feedback. Obviously, they're going to need some constructive criticism, but make sure it's constructive the whole time.
The next one is give material meaning that is personal. And that goes back to what we said earlier about finding out about your students and their lives and building into their lives and making the material relevant and building schemata with all these things that they don't know about. For instance, if they don't know about a beach and you're going over a lesson that involves the beach and you can't take them to a beach on a field trip, maybe give them a video that has a beach in it, or maybe go to the beach yourself and bring back sand right from the beach. There's so many ways that you can make the material personal and increase their motivation to want to learn it.
Right. And the next step that Barbara Davis suggests is creating a positive learning community. So obviously, you don't want to create a negative learning community.
That would not help if everyone was poopy in your classroom all day and just upset the whole time. That's probably not a good thing.
Right, but how do you do that? Those steps are hard to think of. It's like an abstract idea. But I think part of this is just yourself, like, being that example of that.
Absolutely.
So your students see how much you love the other students, then one of the motivations that they have for treating other students positively is that you love that student as much as they should love that student.
And going along with building a positive learning community, make it known to your students that you enjoy learning and that you're enthusiastic about it. Because if they know that you really care and you're authentic, that's going to have a huge impact on their motivation and their perception of learning and what learning is. If you don't show motivation and joy in what you're doing, they're definitely going to pick up on that.
Right. And the fourth point that Barbara Davis makes is to give assignments with a healthy balance between difficult and easy.
So with that hint by Barbara Davis about teaching, where you find a balance between assignments that are not too difficult and not too easy, I really agree with this, because that is something that as a teacher, you're going to have to make sure that you're doing that all the time. And I actually work with a program online called Reading A to Z. And there's a child at the program at Roberts Academy right around the corner from CCU that I work with. And every morning we go through this power struggle of me wanting him to read a hard book and him wanting to read an easy book. And it's a constant, you just have to constantly be checking up on yourself as an educator. Are you giving students something that's too easy? Are you giving them something that's too hard, that's killing the morale and the motivation? And that's a pretty big deal.
Right, and if it's too hard, I also participated in a program called Whiz Kids, which utilized that program, Reading A to Z. And sometimes when the book was too difficult, or if it was even too easy, they would get bored and they would get frustrated, and so they would want to use the program to color all over the book. They found that coloring tool and decided to decorate the monkey in the picture or whatever it was.
Once they learn how to put those gold stars on there, it just kind of goes crazy and reading is out the window, and you just have a page full of smiley faces and disappointed parents.
Yeah, it's all downhill from there.
And so as we move on here, we come to a common denominator in education, where reading is one of the hardest things to find ways to motivate students. And this is common in all areas, all upbringings. It's just most difficult at times to find ways to motivate students to read.
Yep. Whatever it is, students are either have that high self-efficacy where they'll go for it, or they'll have the low self-efficacy where they don't believe they can do it, or they think they can, and they think that the information is too easy for them. Eric Hobson of the IDEA Center wrote an article, Getting Students to Read. And in his article, he highlighted these three tips.
The first tip is teaching reading strategies. And there's a ton of reading strategies that you're going to learn in your time as becoming an educator. There's phonics, there's sound it out, there's learning the sounds that each letter makes, and learning the I before E, except after C. There's all these different strategies that you can teach your students to help them learn to read.
Right. And another one is scheduling reading and tests closely.
And so this is something that a lot of people in college get frustrated about with the testing. They want, if you have an assignment, you want to be tested on that assignment sometime near that. And your students are going to want the same thing. If you tell them to read a book at the beginning of the quarter, you should have the test for that book at the beginning of the quarter.
Right, and I think that produces the best kind of outcomes with learning. If they can see the test results right away, if they can learn something, get tested on it, and then understand what they got wrong, what they got right, then they can use their intrinsic motivation and learn the topic.
Especially the consistency that you're going to give them by giving the assignment, testing over it consistently. That's going to help students. There's no reason to keep test questions a secret. There's no reason to have them build that stress. If you want them to learn something, give them the assignment and test them and make sure they learned it.
Right. Tests aren't always a negative thing for students. And then the third aspect that Eric Hobson talks about is explaining the relevance of the reading assignment. And this is relevant to all subjects, but especially for reading. A lot of times students aren't motivated to read. That's just how it is. So Hobson suggests just explaining how this helps them out in their day-to-day life, how it helps them out with what they're learning, and hopefully understanding that if they really understand this is something that's going to help me out, they're going to want to learn it.
So we covered a lot. We covered a lot of things that involve motivation and how students will view themselves, how you will view yourself as a teacher. And earlier we were talking about that article by the CEP, and they had a wonderful quote that just speaks volumes to how important it is to care about motivation and encourage your students to be themselves and learn about who they really are. And I'll go ahead and read that. It says, "Teachers whose instructional styles encouraged autonomy were also most effective motivators, while those who reported a more controlling style were less effective motivators." So that just goes to show, it's not really just about you as an educator, it's really about your students and about them finding themselves.
Yeah, I love that quote. So in conclusion, teaching doesn't have to be a game of cat and mouse with like rewards and punishment, trying to get them on their best behavior, but also trying to push them to be motivated by themselves. Like we talked about with Carnegie Mellon University, they encourage teachers to have an open line of communication in their article so that teachers can use that communication and hold students accountable and explain the relevance of their subject to their students, which we talked about is super important for the intrinsic motivation that we really want our students to have.
So at the end of the day, we really want you to know that we really care about you as an educator, and we really care about the students that you're going to have influence on. So the biggest point that we want to drive home here is that it's not all about you, it's really about your students. And go out and discover what motivates your students and what motivates you to motivate your students. So, this is Jordan and Cassie. Thanks for listening to Stuff You Should Learn from Cincinnati Christian University, and we hope you change the world.